Welcome to Beach Houses and Babies, a private practice recap podcast. I'm Sam. On today's episode, we'll be chatting all about Private Practice Season 6, Episode 4, You Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone, written by Fred Einesman and directed by Anne Kindberg. It aired on October 23rd, 2012. Enjoy! Today we have a very special guest host on the pod. They get even more attached to fictional characters than I do, and has exquisite taste in media, if I may say so myself. Please welcome our Amelia Scholar, Margot.
Hey, it's been a minute.
I know, that was supposed to sound like that hockey arena, bah, 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 but it sounds more like Blue's Clues. So
it does sound a little Blue's Clues-esque, but that's all right.
Take it for what it is, or isn't.
I respect it.
Thank you. Yeah, it has been five ever, as we millennials
It has been five ever.
Say, although what does the Gen Z say?
I don't know. I would just say, man, it's been ages, but that's okay. I don't think that's very hip and with it, so. I also just said the phrase hip and with it, so I think that says a lot,
actually. It's not so, what do you say, is it chuggy?
I guess. I don't really even use that because I don't like how the word sounds. Like,
it sounds like chewy, but with a G.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what it is.
I don't like pronouncing it. It just feels icky, so.
I've only heard it a few times.
Yeah.
So how are you? Been a long time. Last time you just said it was Barbie last time you were on.
Yeah, that was back in July, so it's been a minute and a half. I moved. That was literally happening, like, kind of a couple days after we recorded that episode.
Uh-huh. So
I was in a state. Still kind of in a state, but for many different reasons. So much has happened.
You were in a different state than you are now.
Well, yes, both physically and emotionally. But yeah, so much has happened, good and bad. But you know, I'm happy to be back.
What are you reading or watching right now?
Oh, reading. I mean, I did some reading at some point that was like non-academic, but everything is academic now. The DSM-5, fascinating read.
Yeah. A classic, if you will.
I'm in a class right now. Oh, yeah. It's a differential diagnosis class, and we use the DSM like it's a Bible. It's not, but we reference it heavily, so I'm reading that a lot. I'll mention some things that I read in reference to things that I've been watching, because I've been really in my film era. Film season was, like, banger after banger, because later releases tend to stockpile towards the end of the year, so I had a lot of watching to do. Became an AMC A-list member.
Mazel.
I keep seeing movies. I was a big Oscar movie enthusiast this year because the Best Picture lineup is one of the better ones we've had in years, I would say, save for one. Flop. Anyways, who said that? Not me. Because I was like, wow, everything bangs except for that one. Ooh. but dear listeners, you can guess as to which one I didn't like. You'll probably actually maybe not guess correctly, but that's okay. My favorite film of last year was Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Masterpiece. I love Martin Scorsese as the shirt that I'm wearing right now.
His face on it how many times? Seven,
multiple.
Eight?
Many. That's Grandpa. Like, that's my boy. Yeah, Lily Gladstone was robbed. Anyways, who said that? Not me. I read some of the books that were based off of some of the films were based off of, because I read the David Grann Killers of the Flower Moon book. I also read Zone of Interest. I don't think I did any more reading than that, because I was like, that's enough. That's enough literature.
Just two little, like, lighthearted topics.
Very. Yeah. So fun. But incredible novels, incredible films, incredibly profound films. That sound design win is one of the most inspired choices that the Academy has made in recent years, because they could have just voted straight down the ticket for Oppenheimer, because, I mean, the Trinity test sequence, yeah, I mean, yeah. It went hard. But the sound design in Zone of Interest was, like, had me sat there, like, floored. It was a character in and of itself. I was just astounded by it, so major props on that one.
Shall I just slightly transition to Succession, because I'm done?
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, you messaged me saying that you were done, and I was like, I can't believe. You went through a pretty a lot quicker than I thought you were going to.
Yeah, yeah. I figured that it would end how it would end it, right?
From okay.
Early on, I was like, oh, this makes sense. This person is going to end up being in charge.
Yeah, it's not as out of nowhere as people on the internet seemed to think. Because
it makes total sense.
When it ended, the discourse got so insufferable and people were like, this came out of nowhere. I'm like, rewatch the first couple of episodes with like a maybe slightly closer eye and like maybe engage your TikTok brain for literally 0.02 seconds and you'll pick up on some things. It's literally in the characterization from the it's in there. Everything is very deliberate. That writer's room is incredibly smart and they know what they're doing. They wouldn't just pull that and be like, guys, wouldn't it be really silly if we just
silly, funny, that? Quirky like, girls.
Like, it's helmed by an incredibly cynical British man. Like, it's not going to be, like, a silly, goofy little random choice. Like, what? Ugh. The amount of defending on the internet that I had to do, oh, it was so over for me. That final season, wow.
The last scene in the car with the handhold, I have not had that visceral of a reaction.
It makes me feel...
to many things.
I am such an enthusiast. And I have a screen cap that's from the screenplay, from the book of scripts, and they're described as two bombs being transported with great care, like, in that scene, that's, like, how it's described in the italicized text, and I'm like, the genius, oh, it's so excellent, wow, those two, I could write essays, it's masterful scene work in every single scene that they have together. Just two performers at the top of their game.
And like, you can tell they enjoy working together.
Well, yes, because they're besties. They're it's truly just work so... wife and work husband. Like,
yeah. We're talking about Shiv and Tom, friends. I'm so sorry we did not say that.
Yeah. I'm like, get into it, guys. Like, it does look like, you know, a bunch of, you know, Getty stock images or whatever, you know, guys in suits, but like, hear me out, let them cook.
It took me a while. There wasn't a point when I wanted to stop watching out of like boredom or not liking it. I simply just like, it was so difficult to watch these characters because as
it
we
is
know,
hard
like, I am drawn to characters, and not to say that they aren't like multifaceted and have valid wants and needs, and it's not that, like, it's not like they're flat characters, it's just they're so despicable and they keep getting more and more despicable.
Yep. And that's why I like it so much. So some people don't grasp onto that, but some people really get into it, and that is why I really was able to sink my teeth into it, because I don't know, I loved hating these people, like, I really did. And then also maybe kind of defending them a little bit.
Have you seen Cruel Summer?
I have not.
Go ahead.
It was, like, maybe on my list at one point, but, like, teen dramas are just, like, I don't know.
That's fair. So I watched both of the seasons, and it's, like, anthology, so the first season is totally different from the second season.
Okay.
The first season feels a lot less like a teen drama than the second season does.
Okay.
Not quite sure why that is, because they follow, you know, the teens. But it really just reads like mystery, whodunit, figure it out.
Interesting.
And it kept me guessing in a way that a lot of shows don't keep me guessing.
Yeah, I heard good things about it.
It's on Hulu, and it's super quick. I would try. Maybe around Halloween, you might be in the spirit, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I always have stuff on when I'm, like, doing work and things like that.
Yeah, this you kind of have to pay attention to, though, because there are little Easter eggs that you can solve them.
Then I'll have it on when I do some crocheting, because crocheting actually helps me pay attention and keep my little iPad baby brain, like, focused on the screen and the words and things like that. I bring crocheting with me to the movies. I'm not embarrassed to say it, but like easy little projects that are just the same stitch, it keeps my hands busy and I'm locked in to the screen, and it's great with me.
No, that's a good idea. Season 2 of Cruel Summer stars
all of the besties. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That's why it was, like, on my list, because then I was like, wait, I might have to tune in, and then it missed me.
I think you do have to tune in. It's Paul Adelstein, Dr. Cooper, Katie Strickland, Charlotte, and Griffin Gluck, a.k.a. Mason, and Cooper and Mason are father-son again.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, it still makes sense. But then there's one scene where they show, like, young Griffin Gluck, and it isn't Mason, and I'm like, we know what he looked like.
Like, we have the receipts. Like, guys, yeah. Pull up an episode of Private Practice. Like,
literally.
And I feel like a lot of people that would have been watching that particular season would know that. It's not like a niche. And I mean, Shondaland is not niche, guys. Like, it's not like some underground little indie that people are going to be like, wait, nobody ever saw that. Like, be so for real for a second, because everybody saw that.
Yeah, BFFR, if you will.
Nobody watched Private Practice. People watched Private Practice.
That's... Only 4.58 million this episode. That was so rude.
Season 6 had a little slump, I think.
It's true.
I always hate to see that in final seasons, especially final seasons that are really good.
Yeah.
Because you're like, guys, they're full steam ahead, like absolutely cooking on this thing, and you're just going to like not tune in for the end.
All right, we have first notes and miscellaneous per usual. We have Todd Ryder with transient weakness and an epidural abscess. We have Pam Ryder, who is pregnant, has a uterine artery laceration. Nick Calhoun is back, dear listeners. The return we did not ask for with pedophilia, depression, and dehydration. Sarah Nelson has a Colles fracture. Megan Stewart doesn't quite have a diagnosis, but she needs a DNC. And then we have Meet James Peterson, which is, you know, here he is. And Charlotte and the Kooplets. What's your first note?
Mouthwash at the desk is wild. I mean, do what you gotta do, girlfriend. But I was like, yo, mouthwash at the desk is objectively kind of wild.
She's not staying home.
No, which is a problem in and of itself. But
yeah.
I was like, girly pop.
Mine is, the pre-puke face we know so well. She needs to get herself a prescription for Zofran.
I'm not a fan of the vomiting. I have another note that says, not a good opening sequence for the emetophobia girlies. stay strong. Stay strong.
Did this feel like an episode of ER to you? Because to me, it felt very ER adjacent.
Yeah, this whole episode feels absolutely like an episode of ER. The way that the tension is built, it feels so, and I mean not only in the fact that it pretty much occurs all in
like an hour,
effectively the ER,
yeah,
but just and like the pace
in real time,
yeah, the real time of it, that's, yeah, it feels absolutely like an ER episode, which did it. Yeah, and I have such separate memories of, like, when I first watched Private Practice versus, like, watching ER, and, like, those things are quite separate in my brain, but then, like, this episode was like, whoa, wait, I don't think I've seen this one in a while.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to stick to our normal structure for this ep because the patients interact so much, but I'm really glad to be back to the patients because it was getting to be a true soap opera for a minute. Not that I'm not here for that and don't want to hear about all of our besties, but I'm really glad to get back to the patients and see our doctors in their element.
But on a medical show, like, you want some medicine happening and not just, like, crying in a bathtub, which, like, vibes. But, you know, on a medical show, you kind of want some medicine to happen at some point. And so, you know, you're going to get it, I guess.
So I have it in our trivia, but Fred Einisman, who's the writer for this episode, he was the medical supervisor, medical advisor, and technical advisor on 289 episodes of ER.
There it is.
So
there it is. Yeah, that's why it feels so...
It hit me right in the feels. Like, it felt like home, even though I watched, you know, Private Practice pre-ER. It just, it's great. And he's a producer on 133 episodes of Grey's.
Okay.
But it's post-dating Private Practice. His dates on Grey's are 15 to 2020.
Wow. Okay. That's that. I'm just like processing that. I'm like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense why this felt so ER.
Yeah, I finished watching and I was like, why does this feel so much like Chicago?
I was like, was this in Chicago? Like, yeah, I was like, Which, why shows in Chicago can never not be the most frantic and stress-inducing things on the planet. Shout out ER, shout out The Bear, like...
Yeah, chef.
All of us Midwesterners are just filled with constant existential dread, so that has to be reflected in the media that comes out of it, which, like, real.
So we're going to talk about Tom and Pam together because they are a couple.
Sounds good.
I love this woman. I love her.
She's great.
When they come in and someone says, we need two beds, she goes, adjoining. And the husband goes, this isn't a hotel. Their chemistry is so funny. So they have three boys at home already, and she's pregnant a fourth time. And he's like, well, maybe it'll be a girl this time. She said, and I quote, not a chance. Your sperm is sexist.
That made me laugh. The delivery was really great on that line.
They're so good together.
They're really great.
And I've seen her on other things as well, and she's great.
Yeah, incredible stuff. I was like, okay, love it.
He's had what they call sympathetic pregnancies, but I thought that's when they thought that they were pregnant, like that one guy on Grey's Anatomy who ended up having, like, a growth in his stomach that was, like, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's...
it was when Meredith was...
term for that. I mean, I think they used to call them hysterical pregnancies. I don't think that that's the term anymore, because referring to anybody as hysterical is not quite correct. I wouldn't really know off the top of my head.
Hysterical pregnancies is what, like, Mary Tudor and Catherine of Aragon had.
Yeah.
Where, like, you want, it's, like, mostly for women. Sympathetic. I don't know. We're not doctors. Let's ask a real doctor.
Yeah,
just kidding.
I'm like,
not gonna actually do that.
I was thinking of something completely different. I don't know. I know nothing.
But the one on Grey's Anatomy when Meredith is, like, over everyone gossiping about her and she gets all the photographers out of the room and even Bailey is like, take a picture of this, take a picture of this. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't think that would specifically be referred to as a sympathetic pregnancy, because I think there's something specific about it. I don't know. I read something about it once, but that's not reliable enough.
I'm finding it. Don't worry.
Sam with Google to the rescue.
Gray's wiki, please.
Oh, I, like, can see his face, which is the problem, because I wouldn't know a name.
Season 2. Wow. Mesenteric teratoma.
Yes, it was a teratoma.
But he presented like he was pregnant.
Correct. Just a big ol' teratoma. They can have teeth.
Yeah.
And eyes.
Oh, another thing.
I know, it's horrifying.
How did you feel about your bestie boo, Amelia, dismissing that consult that the new ER doctor wanted her to do?
Maybe not, like, the finest of moments. Like, I'm not gonna say that it, you know, just kind of a flat moment. But, you know, she definitely has, like, an affront to, like, new personalities. Especially since she's in such, like, a tumultuous time in her life and, like, really trying to, like, you know, keep her ish together. So it's definitely, I feel like it's pretty defensive. It's not done in, like, bad faith. I think she's just presented by, you know, a person that she's unfamiliar with, and it's kind of scary. Not to say that it excuses it, because this is somebody who, like, should not be sent home and, like, really does need help.
Yeah.
But
it's something that would actually happen in the medical system.
Definitely. Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? And especially with the volume of, like, people that they're dealing
that
with.
Night.
And, like, she's got brain surgery to do, literally. Like, she's got to, you know, get stuff done. And staffing is probably not what it should be. But, and he's frantic because he was, you know, sleepy little ER. Not tonight. That line made me laugh at the beginning, because as I remembered what episode it was, I was like, oh. Maybe you shouldn't have said that, because this is not a sleepy night at the ER.
Well, they didn't say the Q word, so they thought they were
That is clear. True, yeah, sleepy. You can't use any sort of, like, a synonym of quiet or anything, because
yeah.
it's going to jinx it, no matter what.
How about when the patient, Pam, asks how long Addison and Sam have been together, like, married, and then, first of all, it's weird that the patients know they were together as well, but also she said something like, we're not together anymore, and then the patient goes, oh, is she as pretty as you? And Stephanie's standing right next to her, and Addison handles it like a champ. They both handle it like champs.
Absolutely.
And then poor Pam, in the middle of labor, is like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, don't listen to me. Pam.
Oh, Pam. Kind of love her.
I love.
Pam spinoff, question mark?
Please. Those three boys and a girl.
Yeah, right.
I love Addison and Stephanie together and how Addison says that Stephanie is terrific at her job.
Yeah, I love that, like, kind of girl moment that I'm like, yeah, okay, work.
And Addison is right to think that Stephanie would know about their relationship at the very least, that they live next door to each other.
Yeah.
That she doesn't know any of that. And it's... Sam is not at the top of my list at the moment, nor ever, but that's also not a surprise to anyone.
I was like, nor has he ever been, question mark? Like,
for maybe a minute there.
Okay.
I just, like, it's so hard because Taye Diggs is so wonderful, and then Sam is standing there in front of me, and they have the same face, and Sam always makes bad decisions.
That is correct. He does make...
Plus, he has my name, which is rude.
I know. Every time you're like... talking about Sam, I'm like, ooh, this has to feel weird for you.
Yeah. And I have a cousin who I'm very close with named Stephanie. So every time I'm like, Sam funny. And Stephanie, Sam and Stephanie.
That's funny.
Okay, we haven't gotten to Sarah yet, but Sarah's dad saying, I messed up, right after Stephanie says Sam has told her nothing about Addison, is a really great stylistic choice.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. I didn't, because I clocked that, but I didn't process it until reading that. I was like, oh, okay, wait, I see how that kind of fits in with the episode.
Yeah, it's just a way to weave all of these things in and out and in and out. I really wouldn't doubt that it all is within an hour. Like, it is an in real time episode.
I love episodes of TV that are like this. Like, I love stuff that's like, you have to sit in it with the characters so that, like,
yeah,
things unfold to them as they're unfolding to you. Back to Succession, season 4, episode 3 is one of those types of episodes where you have to sit in it, and it's as jarring for them, for you, as it is for them. And I think that it's such an effective mode of storytelling. Oh, I love it. I love it.
When they don't have time to process that you cannot see, I just think is always the correct decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, having, like, any show, any form of storytelling, if one character is told something and you see them being told that and you see them processing it or hear them processing it, it's always better than being like, well, so and so said this and I felt this way. No, let me see how you're feeling.
It allows for such good acting too, especially face acting. I am a big proponent of the face acting. And we've got some really good face actors working right now. And I think that they need to start teaching classes. They need to start making the rounds, because I think subtlety is so underappreciated in performances. And stuff like this allows for people to do some crazy. And if it's shot well, you get to experience it in a very visceral way.
Mm-hmm.
I love that kind of visceral stuff. I think it's, that's good food.
Speaking of visceral stuff, how about that Shondalog that Stephanie said to Sam? She thought Sam was the one. Poor Stephanie.
And she ate it right up. Like, yep.
She did. She said, because I'm fantastic, which is a quote that our bestie Addison said to her, that she is fantastic. Stephanie says right back to him, I am fantastic.
Yes.
I am fantastic. Yes, Stephanie, know your worth.
She was validated by another woman, and she took that to heart, and she believed it for herself, and she spoke it out into the universe. You know what? That's a woman who knows her power, and she knows her worth.
And Sam needed to hear it.
Yeah. She does not want to be strung along by this guy. Like, she's like, I'm worth way more than that. And you know what? Yes.
The line she says about, you know, I had butterflies and I thought that, like, that wasn't a thing. Or, like, I thought only stupid people got that. I had butterflies. But then I realized that you give everyone butterflies. That is just what you do. And it wasn't me who had butterflies. It was you who gave butterflies. However,
that was, yeah.
Fred Einismann wrote it better, obviously. But I feel that. Like, that is every musical theater boy with the charisma. The lady was too stunned to speak.
Oh, as soon as you said musical theater,
you know,
boy,
I'm
that
right.
Was so funny. Yeah, oh.
Yeah, you know I'm right.
Yeah. That's so funny.
And dear listeners, you know I'm right.
No, I know you're correct. I know the type. I know the people, because those were like the people that I was associated with. So I saw my friends' hearts get absolutely broken.
I know for a fact that people I went to high school and college with listen to this. So yes, mm-hmm. I'm talking about who you think I'm talking about.
Oh, that's hilarious. You're like mentally sending them the full government names of like those specific people.
Social. Yeah. Oh yeah. Address.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Date of birth. They know.
Oh yeah. That's friendship.
Our girl Pam has a C-section in the ER.
That felt ER. That felt like an episode of ER.
Yes, yes. But that's never happened on... I might bite my tongue here. I do have a PhD in Grey's Anatomy. But has there ever been I know that there's been a C-section on a kitchen table, but there's not been a C-section in the emergency room that I can recall.
Like, maybe, but, like, I mean, they try not to do that because, like, they don't...
Germs.
Excuse me. And they don't really do that because, like, it's not a safe thing.
And not even in a room. Like, not even in a trauma room. Like, just behind like a curtain.
Out there is wild. Like,
yeah, with as we will learn, like, Sarah Nelson behind one curtain and Megan Stewart, who's getting ready for her third or fourth miscarriage, behind the other curtain. Like, not even a door between this woman's insides and people with the flu.
Yeah, like what? It's giving sepsis.
It's giving maternal mortality.
Yeah, it's very scary. I mean, like, I bet it's happened, but it's not something I want to think about happening because that's horrifying.
Don't like that. And her husband is rushed to emergency surgery because the new ER doc did catch something very rare and very serious.
Which, like, yay. I mean, not yay Mazel. For, like, rare and serious, but, like, yay that it was caught.
Yes, of course, of course. But now, I couldn't help but think, both parents recovering from major surgery with three children at home and a newborn baby.
Whew, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's, yeah, some people, that's their calling, but not for me.
The children part or the surgery part?
All of it.
All of the above.
Like.
Control Alt.
And those two things then, on top of one another, absolutely not.
I didn't know whether to put this in Megan or our writers, but Megan comes in when she hears the baby crying and she starts sobbing and Jake comforts her. That is, I can't even think about it. Like, everything about Megan's storyline is so difficult for me.
Yeah, it's rough.
Do you have anything else for our writers who are getting ready to go home to a very full house?
May the odds be ever in your favor, I guess. Like, that's, wow. Hope you get some sleep or have a good nanny or all of the above.
They need a night nurse.
Yeah, because, what, three other kids and a brand new baby? Yeah, no, that's... And, so, like, a mother who is going to be an and father. Like, everybody's recovering from surgery.
Yeah, major.
Major surgery. Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's... Whew. Hope you have
I just feel like
some people.
She's definitely going to get an infection, and I'm upset about it.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel right for where people are. I mean, I'm thinking through a lens of today, but, like, people just hacking their lungs out with COVID in the middle of the ER. Like... That's the environment you that you just had a C-section in. Ew, that's so scary.
Like, why even worry about sterile gloves? I'm glad that they did, but, like,
why?
You
gotta do at least something. If it was life-saving, then, like, I mean...
Yeah.
It's the throwing a Hail Mary, but, like, they're doing what they, I guess, had to do. But it feels so unimaginable because I'm like,
Moving on.
Yeah.
To Nick Calhoun, So when we scheduled this little partay, I suggested you watch 6-2. Is that one you watch a lot?
No, not. I wouldn't say I particularly do.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. I am familiar.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on Nick Calhoun?
It's really complex, obviously, from the standpoint of somebody who is studying mental health. And things like that. And they do approach it with a certain level of nuance that I wouldn't necessarily expect from a show of its time. Correct. Considering they, you know, flaunted a incorrect diagnosis when the correct diagnosis existed, when they did the whole multiple personality disorder thing, when dissociative identity disorder was already in the DSM at that point. So yeah. I was like, I wasn't really expecting them to like have any sort of nuance or understanding, but I'm glad that, like, I mean, obviously I knew that they were gonna have James, like, somebody like James react the way that he did. Like, that's not unexpected, especially from media portrayal. But I'm glad that, like, Sheldon in that instance was, like, trying to advocate the best that he could for his patient, because, like, that's his duty. Like, that is what he has to do, and he was understanding, like, of the fact of, like, I need to, like, make sure that things are okay. Like, it's not as cut and dry as someone like James was trying to make it all seem.
It was striking to me how in 6-2, Sheldon said, because it was Pete's funeral as well, dear listeners, if you didn't watch or listen to that episode, and he said, I just can't stop thinking about how Pete is not here, and, like, he was a good guy, he had a wife and a family, and I just saved the life of a person who, what did he say? Something like,
I'm not sure deserves live or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I should have saved, something like that. But then when another doctor, who he does not know, throws basically that same line in his face, he sticks up for his patient, which is what we want a doctor to do. Now, of course, this is a really complicated situation. And Sheldon thinks, I mean, I'm coming ahead here a little bit, but he runs and makes sure that he has not abducted Sarah Nelson.
Yeah.
But let's go back to the front. Peterson, that's the new ER doc's name, right?
James, I think it's Peterson.
Peterson.
I almost said James Patterson. Says, that's really funny.
He has another career as an
author. I was like, and the ghostwriter of the, like... Yeah. That's so funny.
Whoops. He has an adverse reaction to the new meds. I do wish they told us which meds these were. I feel like there has to be a reason that they didn't. Do they still use meds for this situation? You haven't gotten to that in your Bible class yet.
No, that's actually correct. Because in my past schooling, we only really ever touched on, like, the paraphilic area of the DSM very, very briefly. And it was a massive lecture, and it was all online, and it was very hard to pay attention to. Did not retain. But we are getting there pretty soon, I think.
Well, you can send in a voice memo whenever you wish.
It's not going to be a fun lecture. But that's for sure. Not like our last one was particularly fun. It was a mix of obsessive compulsive disorders and then trauma related disorders. So real, you know, light and breezy.
Speaking of light and breezy, Sheldon comes in a tux, and Charlotte says he looks like James Bond, and he says he wants it to be Sean Connery.
And I respect that.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. I love that he was just like, heck yeah, thank you.
Which I see. I see that.
Yeah, I mean...
Out of all the Bonds.
Sheldon just shows up in a tux out of nowhere. Like, it's gonna be a little like, what's going on?
I want to know where he's coming from.
I know.
Recidivism implies a first offense. That's a quote I put down. And my last note, because I really don't have much for Nick. James says the bed should go to someone who matters.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing to hear a doctor say, I think. Because you're like, oh, that's who's, like, treating patients. Like, yeah. Regardless of anything, people that are being treated in the ER are human beings. They're human beings. What a crazy thought.
In distress.
Yeah, that are actively seeking help. Definitely an interesting person to have working in the ER.
Do you have anything else for Nick?
Not particularly. I was just surprised by the viewpoint that the show was able to take, despite maybe thinking that they would be a little bit more outdated in terms of, like, rhetoric. I mean, not to say that people weren't still treating people pretty poorly, but, like, it was a little bit more nuanced than I had thought that it would be.
I do have to say I have been quite pleasantly surprised by that throughout this series so far.
Yeah, in some ways I have been, and then in some ways I'm like, oh, that's aged really poorly, like the whole dissociative identity disorder thing. A very bad problem in a lot of medical TV shows. No medical show of any part of the 2000s or 90s is exempt from that. And it's not an excuse. It's just, like, I hate to say that you should expect it, but, like...
Don't be surprised when it happens.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's, like, it...
Don't expect it, but if it doesn't happen, you're like, oh, great.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, there it is. Because, like, if things are starting out a little bit too well at first, be a little concerned. Because you're like, wait a minute. When's the shoe gonna... And then the shoe drops. It will drop.
On to Sarah Nelson with Colley's fracture. Is it weird to you that Cooper gets called to the ER for a patient's arm fracture? Like, I get it serves the story, but it just seems weird to be called in the middle of the night for a broken arm.
Yeah, if I went to the ER, I don't know why they would call, like... my pediatrician.
No, that they follow so up strange. they let them know that you have come, and then they follow up the next couple business days.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't be like, hey, yo, call up the pediatrician, this is like, nobody else can treat this child, like,
yeah,
it's emergency, like, you're being seen by like the first person that you can, because it's quite literally an emergency, like
a room for emergencies.
They made a TV show about it. Like,
thank God.
Like, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, that felt very strange.
The new ER guy thinks that Cooper isn't seeing the full picture, which is interesting, and we have talked about before, especially when Sheldon was brand new, about how, you know, they need a new set of eyes to see the world through.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like most characters in these Shondaland shows have a hard time when they're really attached to things being objective. And I mean, it's a very human experience. It's realistic that, like, when you're really attached to something, you're gonna see things in a skewed sort of lens. You're gonna have some sort of bias, you're gonna have some sort of predisposed. So, like, it's just a thing. I had a thought that just totally disappeared. did you see it disappear from my head? Yeah.
I did. It went into the ceiling fan, actually. I saw it.
Got whisked away.
James says, latest in a long line of questionable injuries, which I didn't see them, and then we also weren't told what they are, so I can't say yes or no. But, like, kids get hurt.
Yeah, kids do things frequently that result in them getting hurt because they're kids. Kids just throw themselves around because the sense of danger hasn't been instilled in them yet, because they have to learn from the experiences that have happened to them. And to immediately label them as, like, questionable is very, very presumptuous.
And to call in DCFS?
Yeah. Good faith reporting laws are in place for a reason. But, like, you have to step back for 2 seconds and assess the situation and assess whether or not you believe that someone is in imminent danger before even making a report like that, and maybe consulting. I don't know. But, like, it feels so presumptuous to just be like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what that is. Which, like, even if you are correct, the mindset that he's in about it is very, very presumptuous.
I want to know where he has come from that he immediately goes to abuse and neglect.
Yeah, it feels like it's informed by something very specific. Yeah. But,
I mean, we know he came from USC. That's what they said. Or UCLA.
USC.
Yeah. But, we don't know exactly what that is. Like, we know what USC is. But we don't know, like, what he, you know,
what made him do that. We don't know anything about him yet. So that's also what makes this particular instance so frustrating, because it's like it's that thing that they always do in these shows where it's like, new person causes drama and tension because they work so differently compared to everybody else
that you know.
Yeah, that you know and you like, so you're immediately predisposed to hate this person even though you know absolutely nothing about them. And it's a very strange kind of, like, tropey thing that they always do in especially Shondaland shows.
Mom and dad are fighting in front of the kid and all the ER attendings.
Yeah.
When Violet is brought in instead of DCFS, which, like, for once, I'm glad Violet is there.
Oh, and I'm so glad that Violet is there, because it's a better step than DCFS.
Sarah, out of the mouths of babes, like I was talking about a few episodes ago, just since daddy was bad, mommy won't forgive him. Simple. We knew exactly what it was. They didn't have to go into any gory details, which, like, they do a little bit later. but we knew exactly what happened.
Exactly.
She says when they fight, she wants to run away. It's quite obvious to me that there's no abuse here, like physical abuse that's causing her to get injured in this way. It's weird that they're dragging it out so much for any reason other than to have Violet and Cooper there and all this attention on this family when
absolutely
Sarah disappears.
Oh, it's entirely convoluted because any rational person that's evaluating this situation would be able to deduce that there's no real reason
physical
to
harm.
Suspect that this child is being physically harmed.
Our girl Violet, well, your girl Violet, the royal you, not me. You are destroying your child, she says.
She just says that flat out, and I'm like, wow. Some people need to hear it.
Oh, they do. They certainly do. And then she says, stop, like her sanity depends on it. And I think that is when they start to actually get it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It starts to kind of like, you see the wheels like kind of turning a little bit, and then they're like, oh, like, of course, like where...
Girl, bye.
Yeah.
Speaking of girl, bye, what happens next?
That's so out of pocket, Sam. Oh my God. I can't believe you did that.
Just like a little bit of humor, just like a touch of it.
Well, you just drop a girl, bye. What happens next? That's bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
This ish is bananas. Yeah, she disappears.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I just was so hung up on the... Wow. Like, that...
My humor.
Wow, that segue Thank was pretty so ridiculous. Much.
When the mom is looking for Sarah, we see the writers. I keep saying the writers. It might be the readers. I don't know. It's cool the way that they set this shot up so that we see everyone.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. Speaking of, Chrissy Whitehead, who plays Sarah's mother, is like... a big musical theater girly, musical theater film girly.
Oh, love.
Is she your guest star spotlight? Because I don't want to steal your thunder.
No.
Okay, well, she's been in the films of The Producers, Company, Lucky Stiff, West Side Story. She's been in a ton of stuff. But she's also in Grey's Anatomy, which we'll talk about later. But she has really great dance classes out here in LA. And I was talking about her classes with co-host Melody. So I texted her Grey's Wiki page, and I was like, do you know her? Like, why do I feel like... And then she said, no, she has the dance classes. And I was like, oh!
That's wild.
So, thank you, Chrissy Whitehead. Thank you.
Incredible. Filmography? Heck yeah. You'll love to see it. You absolutely love to see it.
Hey, dear listeners. Editor Sam here. She's also in the movie Every Little Step, which is integral to my personality. If you haven't seen it, go see it. She's in Every Little Step. And she plays a Christine auditioner, which makes sense. All right, back to the show. When Sheldon hears about Sarah, he checks Nick's room, but Nick is there. And Nick is, like, a little bit upset, but not super upset. He says, I would have thought it was me, too.
Yeah, it's like you're upset that that's what someone would think of you, but then you kind of considering and being like, yeah, I do get it.
Yeah. If I were Cooper or Charlotte, I would have checked for Mason immediately, not because I would be afraid Mason is missing, but because Mason always seems to be hanging out with Cooper's patients.
Oh, absolutely. Like, he is a kid, so he's, like, trying to find out where someone he can hang out with is. Like,
yeah. But, like, he was playing flag football with one patient. He goes in and sees another patient, and they're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, my mom died. I would check for Mason.
No, that's incredibly valid.
Is it just me? Or would you think that they would give Sarah's parents a private room to be in, even if it's busy, like, for privacy and also because the hospital kind of opened itself to litigation a little bit?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how that would work, like, administratively. Yeah, I try and think of things a little too realistically sometimes, I guess. But I mean, especially if, like, they're going to have to consistently keep, like, speaking to, like, authorities and, like, things like that. I feel like they'd want that, like, out of the way.
Exactly.
Like, you would want... You don't want to have to deal with, like... Because, I mean, patients aren't going to want to see cops around. Patients are going to be, like... There are people who are going to be, like, really not comfortable with that. Or, like, people are going to... People need to move through... There's gurneys flying. Like, people gotta go. People gotta move. You don't want people just, like, sitting around clogging up, like, a waiting room.
I do see the mom's or parent side of things of saying, like, she's gonna walk right back through that door.
Yeah.
When after they find her coat outside on a bench, they said now she's a missing person.
Yeah, they have, like, solid proof.
Violet says, like, you need to go home. And Sarah's mom says, in a beautiful delivery by Chrissy Whitehead, we can't go home. That, as you say, her face acting in that line.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Face acting, and Violet, I'm saying.
It's the new 35 millimeter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Violet, with all of the one-liners this episode, simply not having time for anything, says Sarah's not going to walk through that door. Which, what do you think she means by that?
I think it's a... I don't know if I would have phrased it that way, because that feels so defeatist. But in the sense, it's definitely providing some realism to the situation of, like, you don't want someone to get their hopes up so high of something that now seems statistically so improbable in terms of how to phrase that to a patient in, like, therapist-y kind of way. I don't know if I would have said it like that, especially for people who are in such crisis. Like, I feel like that would be so activating to hear. Like, what do you mean she's not gonna walk through that door? What do you mean, is our daughter dead? Like, it would be really, like, activating for someone to hear.
So do you think she meant she's not coming to this place? Do you think she meant she's more likely to show up at home? Or do you think she simply meant, like, get out of here, you're not wanted?
I don't know if it's necessarily either. I think it's more of the sense of, like, it's not gonna be that simple of, like, she's just gonna walk through that door, whether or not she was abducted or whether she's hiding out somewhere and, like, she really doesn't want to be found, because, like, she literally earlier in the episode said something about, like, past thoughts of, like, wanting to have run away. It's not out of the entire realm of possibility that that's something that she could have done. I'm not exactly sure what she was gearing at when she said that, but, like, I feel like hearing that would be really upsetting.
I agree.
But that's
everything Violet has said to this family has been so upsetting. Not incorrect, but upsetting.
Yeah, like, objectively, she's probably right, like, when she says that. Like, it's not like she's lying to them. I just don't know if those are the words that are appropriate for this scenario. Not entirely sure. That would be a really hard situation to breach. I feel like that's something we would talk about when talking about, like, ethical dilemmas or things like that, when we, or just difficult circumstances.
Anything else for Sarah?
No, just some really good performances, I think. I think this episode is really well done, and, like, now that I have the context of it having somebody attached to ER attached to the episode, I think makes me like it even a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, it's familiar, it's comfortable, it's...
Feels like you're in good hands.
It does feel like I'm in good, safe hands.
On to Megan Stewart. I don't have too much about her. I feel like she was there to forward the Addison and Jake story in a way that it didn't necessarily need to be forwarded. And I wish that we didn't have a woman in crisis to forward that story. Like, I'm glad she got a check. Believe me, I'm very glad she got her healthcare days. But, like,
yeah.
I wish that it was not, it was a patient who was not as serious, right? She's 12 weeks and she's had a miscarriage, which is extremely sad. I mean, it's sad at any point, but 12 weeks after she's told people and has presents, like, I can't. And she needs a DNC. And that is like a, well, look it up, dear listeners.
Yeah.
It's illegal in a lot of states now, but it's also medically necessary procedure. Anyway, here we are. It's her fourth miscarriage. My girl Addison says, I'm a doctor. She says this to Jake. I'm a doctor, so I know how far is too far. Do you? Girl, what?
Yeah.
I thought she was gonna say she knows and Megan might not know. Not that Jake doesn't.
Yeah.
Uncalled for.
Yeah, not... Addison has been kind of taking some massive L's in, like, recent episodes.
Correct.
It's rough.
Addison goes all into like how he needs to stop helping them have a baby through IVF and how he is making this woman feel hurt, which is not true. But he says they moved there to be seen by him.
Yeah, it's...
So if he says no to them, they're just going to go to someone else.
Yeah, it's like, what can you really do? Like, it's... I don't know. I'm not really understanding Addison at all.
I feel like she is just so happy having just adopted Henry, or having, I think she's still fostering him. We haven't had a formal adoption yet. She's so happy with Henry that she's like, why would anyone ever want to be pregnant and have a baby? Which, like, is, they're not, it's not her, it's not what she's actually thinking, but am I making sense?
Yeah, it's, no, I get what you're saying. It's just very strange how she's going about her interactions with people.
Megan looks so disgusted when Jake suggests other options for having a family. She's, like, disgusted and upset, and I just feel so bad for her.
Yeah.
Any stray notes about Megan?
No, I do not.
On to meet James Peterson. What's your first note?
Oh, hey.
They're really pulling us in all sorts of different directions for him. Like, he wants to fight for the dad of the pregnant mom, but not for the pedophile. Like, do we have another patient chooser like Sam Bennett on our hands? Is he gonna, like, not save someone? And Sheldon says, oh, I guess you missed the day in med school where they tell us we have to help people.
Certainly interesting.
Almost weird that he immediately helps the dad. Because he thinks the worst of the Nelsons. He doesn't think that what's his name is even worth a bed. But he goes to bat for Mr. Ryder. Like,
it's really interesting.
And there are things like he's so nice to Charlotte and he's really making, like, I guess, a professional effort with his colleagues. So it's like, are we supposed to like him or not? It's like what you were talking about before of, like, he's here to shake it up, if you will.
Yeah, they always have to add somebody with a very, like, interesting personality.
Cooper doesn't like James and says that Pete did it better, which makes Violet smile, and I thought was very sweet.
Oh, it was very sweet.
It sounds like Dr. Peterson, Mr. James, told Charlotte that Amelia made the save, but really it was him.
Yeah.
Amelia looked like she was going to tell Charlotte, but then Charlotte was called away by security and obviously didn't have time to say it.
Yeah, because Amelia would never take the credit for something like that. And that's not her style.
No. I think she knows she'll see Charlotte later. Try to say that three times fast. She'll see Charlotte.
Yeah, that's... Just Amelia has too much integrity to, like, snake something from someone. And I feel like anybody there would, like, would know that that's not her style.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he's fresh.
But it's very interesting.
He looks shocked by how hot Amelia is out of her scrubs. Like, he looks shocked. He's like that.
Get in line, bud. Like,
in the Looney Tunes cartoon that's like, awooga. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cartoon sound effect, awooga. Yeah.
And his eyes pop out of his head.
Yeah.
And then he asks her out to a bar. But
I mean, hey, how would he know?
He didn't know. Exactly. He didn't know. I'm glad he doesn't know, because that would mean that the people at the hospital are talking about her.
Yeah.
And he hears it. And then she just trauma dumps about her baby, which, fine, I guess.
Yeah, she drops that a little out of nowhere, but, like, she's in such a state, but, like, I mean...
An ongoing state.
Yeah.
She has this beautiful line about him thinking that they're about the same age and that could be fun, and she says, we're not the same age, I'm about 100 years older than I look, which, right in the heart for me.
Yeah, she... Yeah, is wise beyond her years because of circumstances that should have never had to have existed. Sad. That's my girl. Like, I... so personal to me. Yeah, that's an excellent line and excellent scene work. She's just so great.
I meant to note what kind of car she was driving. I remember it being a sedan, but I don't remember more than that.
She's not, like, a sports car driver.
Oh, no. No, but...
She drives a humble sedan. I mean, it's a nice one, but...
I could see her being in, like, an Audi sedan. I could see
that. Was literally about to say an Audi. It's...
Character work!
Yeah.
But when she moved to Seattle, I feel like she definitely got a Subaru. And that's not to be like the super.
But yes.
But yes. But I mean, yes. Just like for adventuring. Yes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, by that standard, she should have had the Subaru from the beginning because she was conceived as a queer character. But
yeah, no, she's definitely a Subaru driver, if you know what I mean.
I think we all quite literally know what you mean.
No, yeah.
Except many people maybe don't. On to Charlotte and the Couplets. How about Mason, our bestie boy Mason, wanting to stay alone at 9 years old?
Yeah, right? Like, you tried it. You really thought. I don't know a single parent that would just let their 9-year-old stay at home alone.
I know. Hildy got rear-ended in the rain, so Mason's in the ER just so he's there. Charlotte goes, yeah, no one can drive in the rain in LA, which is so true.
It's like how people here in the Midwest can't drive in the snow.
Yeah, but it is like on another level because it rains so infrequently.
That's true.
That like people can't drive in the snow because they just can't drive in the snow, but people can't drive in the rain because they don't have any practice and then they freak out.
There is like ways to drive in the snow though, and it's like people just forget how to drive completely. Like,
oh yeah, their brain pops out of their head.
Just there's precipitation coming from the sky and everybody's like driving incredibly stupidly. Like, okay, let's get real.
I almost gave Mason the MVP again this week, even though I just gave it to him, because he's using a stethoscope to listen to the walls because he read that live people got buried alive in the walls and wants to make sure that no one's buried in the hospital walls. And that made me think of the early days of the internet, which like 2012 isn't quite early days, but like only DSL, right? Not like Wi-Fi. Oh, early days of the internet without parental controls.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that boy is reading who knows what on the internet, scaring himself half to death.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's freaked out. And I think it's incredibly endearing that he's, like, totally snooping with this
I know, it's so hard to say.
Stethoscope to the wall. Wow, 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 wow. Stethoscope.
She sees Charlotte with the stethoscope. Tongue twister.
Wow, I suddenly don't know how to speak my first language. Like,
the lady was too stunned to speak.
Correct.
Also, he matched the ad on the wall because the family in it is also wearing green striped polos.
Funny.
Green striped polos. It made me laugh. And I also was like, why did they choose for him to wear this when they know he's going to be in the shot with that? But hey, Mason's worried that Charlotte and Cooper will break up because he was hearing the Nelsons fight. And Cooper says they're a badass family unit and won't break up.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
New ER doctor figures out that Charlotte is 12 or 13 weeks pregnant and she looks shocked that he knew. I don't know if she was shocked that he knew how many weeks she was or that she was pregnant because she's not hiding that well from anyone. Because
it can't be. No, you threw up around him.
On him. On his him, shoes.
Even. It's a very specific instance. Like, I don't know if she thinks she's being really, like, DL or anything. It's not working, girl. It's not. Love you, but...
Not hiding it?
No.
Anything else for the Couplets and Charlotte and Mason and Cooper? And...
I do not.
All right, I have some miscellaneouses. Do you have any stray notes to start off with?
No, I didn't really have any. I was kind of locked in with just the momentum of the episode.
We see a nanny for Violet. Woo. And they're all mentioned. And I'm just glad that we finally see someone doing the caretaking for these people.
Yeah.
And the fact that the nanny feels comfortable enough in her relationship with Violet to say what she did about Lucas sleeping in the bed is...
Yeah.
Great. And I mean, that shows me that, like, Violet might actually be a good person to work with.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I normally wouldn't really think, but it feels like Violet is open to discussion.
Which I feel like is maybe character growth, perhaps.
Yeah.
You love to see it.
Did you see Sam take a huge sniff of his taco salad after being handed it by the cafeteria worker?
I did not, but now I'm upset that I didn't.
I'm sure it was simply a blocking thing where, like, he needed an extra second for Addison to get close enough to speak words.
But that is such a choice.
He was just sniffing his taco salad. It might have been a burrito bowl. I don't know. I feel like it was a taco salad. But he just gave it a big sniff over the little metal thing.
That is such a choice, too.
It was.
Oh, that's funny.
It's strange that we see the cafeteria for the first time now in the last season. I'm thinking that they didn't build it, right? Like, no. They used the set. They used, maybe not the set from another show, but I feel like they used the hospital, like a real hospital for that. Or a school even, who knows?
Something, yeah, I don't know. But I did not see him take a sniff of the food. I really wish I did, though.
It's worth going back to watch simply for that and Mason matching the ad.
That's so funny.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just laughing at the thought of just watching him just take a big old whiff. It's so funny.
I giggled. I hee-heed.
You hee-heed?
Tee-heed. Tee-heed.
Did you ha-ha even?
Hee-hee-hoo-ha.
Oh, wow.
Do you think not having a cafeteria is another way that they try to differentiate Grey's Anatomy from Private Practice? Because it seemed like, you know, with Addison in therapy, they were leaning into making it more like Grey's Anatomy, of giving the episodes a theme.
Well, maybe.
But, you know, there's so much, especially in early seasons, of the cafeteria and just eating lunch together, where in Private Practice, they're either at a restaurant, on a patio, or in their little kitchen.
Yeah, maybe. I think they wanted it to feel a little bit less, like, isolated into one environment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a good thought.
There's metal music behind almost the entire episode. Not the entire thing, but, like, pretty consistent up until Sarah disappears. And it gives it a movement and an urgency that we don't normally get on this show, and I really appreciate it. I can't say how much I really appreciated this episode, because it feels like Private Practice, but it feels like Private Practice that's had, like, a triple latte or a quad.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely had some bonus espresso shots. Like, it's... Yeah. It's firing on so many cylinders that I feel like is not entirely typical of the show. So it does feel a little bit, like, strange in the context of how the show usually operates.
Yeah, but it is true to the show, I feel. Like, I still know what show I'm watching, which...
Yeah.
We have a few episodes coming up where it's like, that's a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, this episode just feels so ER and classic Grey's Anatomy.
It really feels so ER.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love the breakneck kind of pace of a lot of, like, ER episodes, which is probably why I love it so much.
Yeah.
I probably had another thought, but I can't think of it, so carry on.
Our Sam style for the week is Addison. It's nothing, like, too noteworthy, let's say. She just looks like she was on call and was called in from her couch, right? Like, it's a sweater that is sort of geometric. It's black on the top and then gray on the bottom and black on half the sleeves, like to short sleeve length, and then another gray. And it just feels quite geometric. Her hair is down. She has on
studs. Would you like to tell the listeners who is wearing this outfit?
Addison.
You did not say that.
Thank you for being here.
I was like, I know we know, but, like...
It's Addison. It's our girl Addie.
There we are.
She has on, I think, what is supposed to be that Cartier bracelet. But it's silver, I think. And, yeah, her hair looks great. Her makeup looks great. She has, like, a purple makeup, and really just here for it. It's simple. It's classic. It looks really cozy. Probably cashmere. Don't know why you're wearing cashmere to the ER, but okay.
Definitely a choice.
Thank you. I mean, yes.
I was like, why are you thanking me?
Who's our guest star spotlight?
So I chose the father, who is played by, can I find his name? There we go. Charlie Hofheimer. Mm-hmm. He's from Michigan, from Detroit. That's what I found. Some of his credits, you're going to talk about it, was on an episode of Grey's. Was on an episode of The Good Wife. Was on 11 episodes of Mad Men.
He sure was. That's Abe.
Yeah, that's exactly where I know him from. I was like, oh my god, Mad Men.
Yep.
And was in, I think, two episodes of For All Mankind. And I love that show. He was in season one of For All Mankind.
Is it scary?
I wouldn't say scary. I would say the situations maybe feel a little bit scary because the stakes are very high.
Okay, because having finished Cruel Summer this afternoon, I think I'm ready for All Mankind.
You need to watch For All Mankind. Oh my god, Jade is going to be really happy that she said that. Okay, the first three seasons, I think, are incredibly stellar television.
Interstellar, if you will.
How dare. We do not speak
is not an on-call room patron Zoom.
Yeah, no, this is not. But I do definitely recommend For All Mankind. Oh my god. Jodie Balfour, wow. So good.
Well, thank you very much.
Of course, yeah, the Mad Men credit was the one that I was like, oh, that's... absolutely, I have to talk about this guy because, duh.
Yeah, he, that's a seminal character on that
absolutely show.
It makes me feel a lot of things and
not all of them great. Yeah, but like so many good episodes.
So trivia for this episode: as I said before, this episode scored 4.58 million viewers, which is so rude of the viewers because this is my favorite episode in a long time. This episode focused on James Peterson, making it the only season 6 episode not to focus on a main character. I don't know if I agree with that. I feel like it focused on the hospital, even though we saw a lot of the patients that James saw. It's not focused on him the way it's focused on other characters and their person-centric episode.
I would agree because, like, we don't really learn that much about him as a person in this episode, like his personal life.
No.
Like, we kind of start to learn about maybe his mindset and his worldview just a tiny bit, but we don't even really spend enough time with him for even that. Like, it's a busy night at the hospital, snap judgments are being made. Like, you don't really get that much of this person for it to be like, oh yeah, this is like a centric episode. Like, that's, yeah.
This is the first episode since his birth to not feature Henry Montgomery. Interesting.
Wow.
Karen Liu, who played Nurse Karen, also played Dr. Hoffman in season 2 of Grey's Anatomy. I was wondering why she looked so familiar, so I looked her up. She was in the train episode, Trauma. She's an OB resident for the two besties who were both pregnant on the train when it, you know, derailed. So she worked with Addison in that too, which is cool.
Cool.
Cool. But she only talks to Charlotte in this episode, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Chrissy Whitehead, who plays Dana Nelson, also played Helena Boy in season 4 of Grey's Anatomy. She's one half of the fighting brides who got injured over fighting over the wedding package on who could hold on to the dress the longest.
Yes, 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 yes. Classic.
Charlie Hoffheimer, our guest star spotlight, who played Ron Nelson, also played Jason Castor in one episode of Grey's Anatomy in season 10. His spine was crushed in an accident, and his wife made Christina wake him up to ask if he wanted to be kept on a ventilator or be allowed to die. And then later on, he was part of Derek and Callie's trial, and he wore this special walking suit. As we talked about, also he played Abe in Mad Men, so that's very personal to me.
In good and bad ways.
Oh, yes. Missy Yeager, who played Megan Stewart, also played Terry in season 8 of Grey's Anatomy. Her young daughter's boyfriend, like elementary school, brought her peanuts for Valentine's Day, and she went into anaphylactic shock. I just watched this one a few months ago.
Yeah, I don't do well with anaphylaxis ones. Too close.
Oh, we don't really see anything, because she's like 6.
Yeah, I know, but it's...
That's me with eyes.
The movie Hereditary? Absolutely not.
Not seen.
Yeah, you would not be able to handle it.
No.
It's a bit scary.
Tisha Campbell-Martin, who played Pam Ryder, my bestie, also played Gladys in season 14 of Grey's Anatomy. She's the woman who collapsed at the wedding that Bailey and Ben and other doctors accidentally attended because they had the wrong location for Alex and Joe's wedding. So this episode was not only wonderful because of the writing and the directing, but it was full of people with double crowns, no triple crowns, but, you know, loving it.
Loving it. Booked and busy. They got the paychecks.
Thank goodness. Do we have anything to mumble about for Margot's mumblings?
Not really. We're kind of in the end game, thinking about that. There's like, what, 9 episodes left after this?
Oh god,
yeah. Which is like wild. It is wild to think about in that regard. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have much to mumble about. I'm excited for the next time I get to be here, because yes, it's an episode that I love.
Dear listeners, dearly, you should also be excited.
Yeah. Oh, there's going to be many discussions, because that's an episode that I love very, very, very dearly.
Oh, good.
It's going to be a good time. I was like, I'm really hoping I get to do that episode, so.
You can always ask if you're not sure. Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking, because, yeah. Let's be real. I know. Let's be real. But,
and you can always ask if you want to be on one. But no, yeah, of course. I did the schedule and I was like, duh.
That's been like the one.
Ready for ratings and MVPs?
Always. I'm yawning.
Okay, my MVP is Stephanie for being amazing at her job and knowing that she's terrific or fantastic, whatever she said. I hope that she finds what she's looking for with someone who is wonderful for her and to her.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think at first I had also put something down for Sheldon for being an advocate for his patient and not succumbing to the, you know, what everybody else is saying about how he should be handling a situation. He is handling things as he should be as a practitioner and advocating on behalf of his client and doing the best that he can for the person that he's supposed to be, you know, looking out for. But also Stephanie for being kind of a badass and understanding her worth and that it's not tied to a man.
Amen.
Who is a womanizer.
He's just a tenor, ladies. He is just a tenor. Not Taye Diggs. He's more than that. He's actually probably a baritone. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I was like, I had to think for a second that I was like, we're back on the theater boy. Yeah,
we're back. We're back to the theater boy.
We're so back.
Meanwhile, my parents' listener are going to be like, what? Who? Huh?
But your friends are going to be like, ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, my rating is going for a run in a crowded city. Not a jog, not a sprint, but a run. Like marathon prep. There's so many things going on, so much to see and so much to avoid. And it just like gets your heart rate up. I felt like my heart rate was up in this episode.
Yeah, mine was kind of in a similar vein, but it's more of you're in a kind of a new city, like somewhere you've never really been before, and you're trying to look at your maps to figure out where you're trying to go, but like everything is like moving so fast around you and you can't quite catch up, but you're kind of frozen in the middle of it trying to figure out where the heck you even are. And that's kind of how this felt.
I love that, because that's very much how it felt as a viewer of this episode. You didn't know where in the hospital you were, but you knew that you were going kind of where you were supposed to be.
And everything's saw places moving around you while you're just trying to assess the situation.
Yeah, we saw places we hadn't seen before, too.
Indeed.
I love that. Well, thank you for being here, and I hope you have an Amelia-cent day. I tried.
I could tell from the loss of confidence in your voice that something didn't quite come out correctly.
Amelia-cent day. Like, magnificent, but Amelia-cent.
Yeah, okay.
If I have to explain it, it's not as good as I thought it was going to be.
That's certainly a word.
But the thought was behind it.
It's all right.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Beach Houses and Babies, a private practice recap podcast. Please follow us on Instagram at BHAB Podcast, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcast or Spotify to be the first to hear future episodes. You can find me at Samantha G. Harris on Instagram.
And you can find me
if you'd like to support Beach Houses and Babies, please consider leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and sharing with a friend. It really helps people learn about the show, and we might read your review on the podcast. You can also become a member of our Patreon community at patreon.com/BHABpodcast. On our next episode, we'll be discussing Private Practice Season 6, Episode 5. This is the Dr. Sam Bennett-centric episode coming up, dear listeners. Ooh, excited for that. It's a creative renaissance. minutes, as Shonda said in the Deadline interview. They're available to stream on Hulu and can be purchased on iTunes, Amazon, DVD, and more, or borrowed from your local library. If you have thoughts you'd like to share with us on these episodes, please DM us on Instagram at BHABpodcast or email us at BHABpodcast@gmail.com to be featured on our listener mail segment.
Thanks for listening. BHAB Podcast will be back in 2 weeks.
TGIT.